So the first thing I have to ask you is, what types of weed control have you experienced moving with your farming?
Well, that's kind of an interesting thing because I've been in on the first of that weed control back in about the 1940s. And in fact, I have a jar out here that came in about 1937, 38, or 1940. It was probably the first 2 gallons of weed spray came into the valley. And since that time, I'd hate to guess how many millions of gallons it probably came in and how many, probably thousands and maybe millions of dollars is spent for weed spray. And the first sprayer we used that with was about 10 foot wide, boom, only for spraying about 10 foot at a time. And from the sprayers they have now, they spray 80 foot, 90 foot I think it is on these big sprayers and spray 500 acres a day where we would spray only a few little spots and things like that. And there's been so many new sprays that came on since then, it's just pretty hard to keep track of. The first ones we had was for small grass, and it was a burning spray, a cyanox. It would burn the little weeds, but it wouldn't burn the grass. And that was the kind we started out with back in about the 38s to 40s. And now then, there's grass, there sprays for most every kind of weeds you can think of. All right. So that, from a 10-foot boom to a 90-foot boom is the changes we've made in sprays.
And before that, you just had the hand weed?
We had the hand weed in the hole. And the reason probably that I was one of the first to start on this spraying was the fact that we had a bigger sprayer that we used for apples. And we were probably the only two or three sprayers in the whole valley, and probably the only one that had both crops and some apples. All right. So that about covers that pretty good.
Yeah, that does. Okay, what types of pest control do you have, like for bugs and stuff? Were bugs a major problem in the crops that you had?
Well, yes, that's kind of a funny one. We had apples in the early years, and when we started spraying the apples to keep them from being wormy, we used arsenic and lead, and then it kind of fell out, and we used DDT, and then the DDT came along, and they found problems with it, and so we've been through probably 20 years of a change of three different kinds of sprays, arsenic and lead, DDT, and now the newer sprays that they have, and I'm really not sure what the names of them are right now. And another one of the funny things that happened this year is our apples that we have here in the yard had no worms in them this year. Now, for 50 years I've sprayed apple trees, you might say, 3 or 4 times a year to keep them from being wormy, and this year this didn't happen. I don't know why. We'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you think that's maybe because the sprays are residues left in the apples?
Well, it could be. Could be the winter weather that killed them, and I just don't know. Any kind of a guess this time, probably.
Yeah. Describe the types of farm equipment you have experienced using and the changes you saw occur.
Yeah. When I got out of college and came back to farm first, had a team of horses, old plugs, and they weren't spark plugs either. They were hardly could move around. And the first $1,000 I ever made farming, I bought a rubber tired Massey Harris 101 tractor that I still have. And I've been thinking about maybe still it's in real good shape and bringing it out and restoring it. Be about at least 60, 65 years old now, and I still got it. And then from that we went to the little larger tractors, and we've had almost every kind you can think of in between the 1940 and up to the present time. that time we had just one little tractor to begin with, and when I was farming we had about three or four wheel tractors for different things. And so these tractors that we had, the biggest I had, we pulled off four bottom plows. Now you see these larger tractors nowadays, they'll have maybe 10 plows strung behind them, or 10 plow bottom plow.
Alright. What types of, like, how did you plant and harvest? What has the changes in that?
Well, quite a change in that. We had just our old flute type drills, and I think I started out with about an 8-foot wide one, and then we went up to 12, and now then they pull two or three drills usually, and some newer types that are air types, feeders, and things like that, so there's been quite a difference in them. And in combines, I started out with one back in about the 1940s. It was a olive chomber and about 5-foot header on it. And now then the headers are up to 30-foot wide. There's that much difference has changed during my time. And I never had more than two combines, and now then, the folks, fellows that have my ground rented, they have 10 combines in the field at a time. So it has changed.
So do you think all these different advances have had a very positive effect on the farming in the Union County area?
Well, yeah, they just changed the size of the farms very drastically. I never farmed more than 550 acres. Now then a farm isn't considered hardly a farm, and else it has 1,000 to 5,000, 10,000 acres now. There's been that much difference in it.
Do you think the problems with using sprays on the, do you think the environmental effect is worse at the time that it saved?
Oh, I don't really think it's made too much in general difference in the environmental. We use lots of it. There's lots of things changed, but I think the term I use quite a bit, we live dangerously, and the way we farm and the way we drive and the places we do, the wars we're in and all that. And so some of the difference in the sprays, how they affected people and things, to me is pretty small. You might hurt one thing improve because of yelling or doing something else. Our fields looked terrible 50 years ago in comparison to what they look like now. It's just hard to believe. And our yields have changed from, oh, probably 40 bushel to,
can you describe to me the types of animal care, how it's changed, and what you remember about taking care of your animals?
Well, and one of the big changes in animal husbandry is the fact now where we used to, when we got our cattle up in the spring and the fall, we'd vaccinate them with four or five different vaccines for different things. And now then those have all been combined into one vaccine, so one shot instead of four or five is maybe quite easier. And there hasn't really been as much change in the veterinary science on animals, I would say, as there has been in crops and things like that. There's been some changes in new medicines and things like that, but not too much difference in the things that we had back 50 years ago and what we have now is problems on livestock. The main thing is the worming and fly control, and one of our main things with cattle that most people didn't think of is pink eye that they had, and they had several go blind from pink eye. And I think that with the fly control and some new vaccines, that's been helpful. a great lot.
What about lambing and calving practices, like, how has that changed?
Well, it hasn't changed much in the methods other than the fact that you see better records being kept and you have easy calving bulls and things like that. It means calves will be a little smaller, different size, and changes in type. But that's been, well, probably the biggest thing. And then the taking the hogs and lambs, the it used to be in the years that a set of twins was something kind of a little different and something that you were kind of proud of. And now then it's triplets that they are talking about instead of twins. And the calves are little colors and they have one big change, I think, in this poll. We used to have to vaccinate. Now they're practicing it all. These calves are polled now. The breed has developed that is one of the big changes. So I think that would be about the main things that I could come up with on that area.
Have you ever held any positions in the local government?
Well, I've been the secretary of treasurer of the city here back 20, 30 years ago for, I don't know, 15, 20 years probably, something like that. And I've been on the ASC committee. That's the committee a number of years ago for determining and working on the wheat acreage and the government programs and things like that. I was in that, I don't know, 15, 20 years probably. And that is about the only things in the local government. I've got one picture here. I'll show you the ballot of the city of Embra in 1964 that you might want. I think there's only two of us that are probably alive now that's on that ballot. Three. So I'll let you have that if you want it. If you don't, you... I think that's probably the only copy in the United States in that.
Probably so.
I think I've got several copies of it someplace. All right.
So, describe any elections you remember being particularly important or interesting to the Union County or Embra community.
Well, I can't really think of any right off that were really important. We've had a friendly city offices, friendly school board, county offices and things like that, but there's nothing that there is any big thing about.
What about political issues you remember having a significant impact on the community?
Well, there really hasn't been too many. The one was the bringing into the Embra school district, the outlying districts like the Somerville over in the part where you live and things like that. And that's been practically the only thing. Embra's kept down to not much development and things like that. And so there hasn't been too many things here that have been real active or to get stir up politics, we might say.
So there weren't even any state laws or anything passed nationally or state in the state government that had a major impact on people?
Not really. Not really. There's a big one going on right now for the state budget, and there's been little things like that along, but they just kind of come and go. A year or two we'll forget all about it probably.
So, describe any particularly strong local government leaders that you remember.
Well, I can name Tom Ruffin, who was the mayor all the time, and I was the recorder. He was the mayor, and I kept track of the money and the things to the procedures and such as that. And thinking back of one thing you... That's a little different in the city of Embra. Back in those times, we got $102, and they don't get much more now from the state car licensing bureau. And how we got our street soiled in Ambler here was the fact that we didn't have much money to do it, but the fellow that did the oiling business in the Grand, he come out and he kind of called us his Social Security. He'd oil a couple blocks for us, and we'd be in debt for 3 years to pay him off for it. And we'd pay him so much each year when he got what money we could. And he liked it, and we definitely liked it. And that's one reason the way we've got, I think, all the streets in Ambler paved and have been paved for probably more years than the ones in most small towns, because of little things like that if we were able to do.
So, this guy attending grade school
at Ambler. Well, that goes way back. The teacher, my first grade teacher, there was two or three of us that were kind of our folks who got us to reading and writing and doing those things before we started school, about like the preschool classes now, but they weren't anything like that then. And we took the first and second grade the same year. We skipped the second grade, you might say. And that way I missed out on English, I would say, and being able to pronounce words that I should have learned in the first and second grade. It they passed me on to the third grade because I could add and subtract real quick and things like that. And and then, as we went on to school, there's a lot of different things. There's, I think, maybe there's two classes in each room, and yeah, it was just kind of like grade school. We were kids, we did lots of things, honoring, things like that. I could tell lots of stories, but those probably shouldn't be published. All right.
So, what were the areas of study when you were in grade school? Like, what did you study?
Now, again, on that, the classes, well, I think maybe I pretty well covered that. There's nothing like a computer or anything on that order in those times. In fact, when I was in the eighth grade, I went up during the noon hour and learned to type. And that was kind of a mistake because I never learned to type with the keys locked up. And I still have to do that bump, punch, punch, look and see what I'm doing and what I'm not copying or printing. And that's about the only difference in the grade schools. We had a lot more on history and things like that. Never even thought of anything like foreign languages in those times. Oh, would be about the only difference I could come up on that.
Well, so what were some of your goals and aspirations as a young person?
Well, the main thing that I came up and went through was the 4-H club and farming. I always figured that was the main thing that I was interested in, wanted to do. My father wasn't a farmer, and we had no farm grounder at that time, and he was a miller at the mill of wheat. They sold lots of wheat, or not lots of wheat, but lots of flour then to China. Shipped a lot out of the kennels. They had a mill at the Grand in Highland City, Ambler, one at Elgin at that time, and people in the valley here, you bought your flour by the sack, 49 pound sack, I think, or by a barrel, or four sacks, and you get those big sacks in for the winter, and that was it. And most all the baking and things were done at home in those days.
So mostly you just wanted to be a farmer when you
did? Yeah, that's about the only thing. I had a chance to go into the bank when I got out of high school, and they told me I'd spend probably local, and then I should go to college, the University of Oregon, and they told me I should go to the University of Oregon. I decided I didn't want to be a banker. I was sold on Oregon State from being down there to probably 6 years before a summer school, things like that.
So describe some of the high points you remember of grade school or high school.
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, I didn't go to high school here at Empner, and I have to thank my folks for probably getting me to go to LeGrand to high school, and I had an old Model A. I drove the last years, the first and second year, I hitchhiked and bummed rides, and people going through to work, and I had some grand folks that lived in LeGrand. If I didn't get away home or something like that, I could just stay in town and such as that. But the main reason that I say just what I did is by going to LeGrand to high school, I was able to have algebra 1, 2, and 3, and geometry, trigonometry, and in chemistry, 2 or 3 terms of chemistry, and physics, and things like that. And I don't believe I'd really made it through Oregon State College if I hadn't had those extra, and Emler didn't teach anything like that. In high school, wasn't that big enough to have those classes.
So those were the things you would consider the high point, is just being able to learn.
Well, yeah, otherwise, the high school is just pretty much like you folks have it, only we've never heard of computers or TV sets or anything like that, and very little. We studied Latin, and that's practically the only foreign language that came up to study, and was different.
So living in the Indian community for so long, do you feel that there's a strong sense of community here?
Well, not as much as a lot of districts. In the early years, before there were cars, and radios, and TVs, and things like that, the town was quite close. But then, as the town has developed and changed, the people here, they changed pretty much. A lot, quite a few rental houses. And these people come and go after 1 or 2, 3 years. And now then when I go into the post office here to get my mail, I very seldom see anybody that I really know. And it used to be, you could say, I knew everybody in Empner. But I haven't stayed close to the schools and things like that. That would probably bring me quite a little closer to the community and things that are doing.
So describe local churches and their effect on the community.
Well, the Ambler district used to be quite strong Mormon community, and that's something that there's very few Mormons that we have here in town now. Most of them have all moved out. And the two churches that we used to have is the Mormon, which is the school building up here, and that was their church, and the old church down on the south end of town was the Methodist Church. Those were the two main ones, and both of those are gone now, and the only church we have is the Christian Church right here in the center of town, and that was worked over, and I think probably I gave them the first $1,000 for that donation to help build that church, and then I haven't been only maybe once or twice to it, but I think it's a great little thing because it's really, you go down, you'll see more cars probably at the Empner Church here, and you'll see it some of the larger churches in LeGrand and things like that. And the same, I probably should say, for the Baptist Church over at Somerville. They have great folks as their ministers, and they're doing a great job for the community, I'd say.
So when there were only two churches, when it was only the Mormon and the Methodist Church, did that cause divisions in the community?
No, not really. The Mormon Church had lots of activities for their young folks, like they still do quite a bit, and it didn't matter whether you were a Mormon or not. All those kids, we figured, if they were having something up there Thursday night, we all led up to it, or Friday night, or they were having a big party. We were all just some as one, you might say, back in that time. There's nothing, you might say, competitive between the churches at all.
They were pretty open to the other
people. Yeah, right. Yeah, very much so.
So, describe the local clubs and organizations you can remember.
Well, there's just many of them, some of them so many years, it's kind of hard to remember, but I would say, the 4-H clubs, the Farm Bureau, and the Grange were strong, and that's really the ones that were with agriculture other than our special cattlemen's organization and sheep organization and things like that, different specialties on it, the local clubs. And I don't remember, I've never joined in a member of Old Lions Club or Rotary or any of those, and they never had a Chamber of Commerce or anything like that in them. All right.
Was there any other, like, women's service club or anything like that, or clubs for more recreational things?
Well, no, not really. The Extension Service had the women's club, and then the extension meetings, like at three different meetings that we go to on wheat special meetings, grass seeds, and things like that. That's about the only groups that I can remember. The county had probably a Chamber of Commerce, but it never taken off, and you went more to the towns and things like that.
Okay, well,
do
you kind of remember from the Inlet area?
Well, probably the first fire that I can just barely remember, or I don't remember, but a picture of it, the burning of about 1910 of the elevator, stored wheat, and they made flour. There was quite a bit of flour back in those times that was sent to China from the mills and the Grand Island City, Hembler, I think Cold had a mill too, probably, and Elgin. And my dad being the miller there, I can remember that going to a potluck at the head of the Legion Hall, and I was probably maybe just going to first grade of school and such, and somebody asked about whether he brought baked apples down for the dinner, and someone mentioning that they saw a bone laying in the basin where they got close enough to look at the window and thought perhaps the hobo got in the warehouse and set the fire and slept there, but when the warehouse was cleaned out, it was never found. And the father rebuilt the warehouse and used it, and then it's now the Wagner Seed Warehouse. When it started, the seed investment started, the warehouse was used for both apples and seeds. And the other, probably the next one that I can remember is the grain elevator it burned here. And it's about the same elevator that's here in Embler now. It was rebuilt, as Billy Howe. elevators, the third, fourth, wood story apple houses were along the railroad track next to it, and they were burning, and the thing was try to save the elevator from burning. It was full of wheat, and it caught fire in under the eaves up there higher than they could get any water to go, and so the fellas were upstairs, and they had some barrels, and they threw water out on the roof. One fella tied himself in ropes and threw water out, and got over, but they couldn't put it out. It was in under the eaves, and so finally somebody suggested maybe they take a shotgun and shoot up there. It was just a small flame, but that might put it out, and that put it out for a minute or two, and then it started burning again, and so the elevator burned down, and I can remember the wheat sliding out from those big bins, and thousands of bushels that are stored in it, and it was all out, and they had trucks hauling it out for feed and salvaging what hadn't got damaged by the fire, and it was quite an operation. And
how old were you when the Grand
Avenue
elevator burned down?
How old? I was probably in high school about then. I can remember quite a little bit about it, the cleanup.
The one before that was an apple? That was the apple?
Apple, yeah.
And then before that was the flour mill before
that? The flour mill before that, then the grain elevator.
Okay.
And then the next big fire, although there would be one more in between that I'll mention, it was the fertilizer plant, Blue Mountain, and down here now, the present is rebuilt, and that fire burst, and it was just about a year or so before that they had the big explosion in Southern Oregon at that might say the name of the town, and I know too, down past Junction, Grants Pass, I believe it was, that tractor or car, a truck, it should be exploded with fertilizer, had caps in it, and blew up about a block of the town. And so when the fertilizer plant caught here, they thought that perhaps the whole town that maybe blow up or come up with a big explosion, and so everybody in town was evacuated, and I have really a good write-up of that from the newspaper that I could look up, but the folks went around, and the highways were closed both ways into town, and it didn't blow up, and the grand fire engine started to come out, and the state fire marshal ordered that it couldn't come in until they found whether anything to blow free. They lose the big engine from the Grand, and so it didn't happen. And I was right in the thick of that. I was sitting in the elevator while it was burning there and helped call up. We had our little engine in Embler that they decided they'd better take it away from the big fire and patrol up town, and if there was an explosion, that they could perhaps save some homes and things like that. And so that was, you might say, another one of the big fires. And the other one would be the half block where the restaurant is. And it had a garage, a large garage, and a restaurant in the garage, and the post office, and the bank building, and the Legion Hall, and the drugstore, and that all burnt. And it was before we had any water in town or anything like that, and all the trucks that could haul water, hauled water in, and but it was a 100% loss. And I might say about the other fire, the seed and fertilizer plant, and I just drilled my well out of town here, and it's about a mile and out of town, and after they got the worst of it over, Burr Coulterite from irrigation at Island City, he had a load of pipe, and he brought a pipe, load of aluminum pipe out that he had, and we run the water in from a mile and a half out of town into the city, across the highway, and things, and there's enough pressure from the artesian well that once when a little booster pump we put in the center of it, when it shut down, and then when we went to start up again, it, the well was just strong enough to run the water through into town and up in the fire engine and spray the fire. So it was quite an experience for volunteers. The other thing about, I might mention on the fire department, and in about the 1945, is probably decided we needed a little fire protection here in Ambler, and so we decided to buy a fire truck from donation, no district or such as that. And so we'll shut down for a minute. The mayor and one of the councilmen, when they decided to buy an engine, there was one advertised in Portland and had a used car lot. So they went down to see it and used one of these old open-air trucks and a siren that you turn the hand and a bell on it to ring. So the used car dealers that had lost thought they had a sale, perhaps, or something that was pretty well obsolete. They let the fellas drive it around the block in Portland. So they couldn't resist while they were driving it around in Portland to ring the bell and the siren, and everybody walking the streets going to work, they looked and tried to find out where the fire sign was at and where the fire engine was going. And the fellas that they used car a lot, they run out and made them drive in on the lot, didn't let them go in the town anymore. But then we went and bought a little pickup from Joss Motors in LeGrand, and they were sent to Boise to make a little fire truck. And it held, I think, 200 gallons. And then they had a trailer that would, the fire engine would go out first, and then Butts Hoover would be in with his pickup and pick up the trailer loaded with water. And we'd go out to the fires. And we were real successful back in those times. We, with only 500, 600 gallons of water, we never run out of water, only one fire, and that was when the high school boy got there early at the time the fire engine was, and he turned it on full force instead of foam. And so that's the way we started out, and it was close enough, and during the Depression that I know of two parties that give 50 cents is what they thought they could give to help buy the fire engine. And I imagine my folks, I don't know, remember, we maybe give $50 or $100, but it's really a community, the effort that started the fire engine here.
When the half block burnt, right by the, where the restaurant is,
yeah,
now, how old were you then?
Well, I was probably 30 or 40. I came back and was farming then.
Okay.
All right, can remember it. All right.
So as far as technology goes, can you describe how the communications technology has changed, like telephones and stuff like that?
Yeah, my foothill place that I got rid of after I retired, I was milking some cows there. We didn't have electricity to run the milking machines. We couldn't get the gas engine to go. We had to milk 10, 12 cows by hand. And electricity came into Ambler in about the 20s, and the foothill place, it had a little power plant of its own for electricity for just the house and the barn. And so Ambler, everybody had their own water system pumps and such as that, and Then the other thing that was quite different was everybody had their lot for their house, and their garden was fenced. Practically, you might say probably 60-70% of the people had a milk cow that they turned out, grazed the streets instead of them having to be mowed, and things like that. And we just kind of developed along and turned the cows out, and usually come home and during the summer, because they'd have a calf, you'd see the calf sucking, and they'd want to come home to their calf in the evening. And if the grass got laid down too short in town, you'd hire a boy with a horse, maybe. You'd drive the cows out in the country roads for them to eat and things like that. And so that's one thing that has definitely changed. And we had, when the telephones came in, they were good. Before that, the Union Pacific trains going through, they had telegraphs, and instead of email, you'd get a telegram and things like that. So it's changed drastically from radio, or from just the telephone. And I tore a telephone when I was a young kid apart, one of the old ones that you cranked and things like that to play with, on that order. But now that it's all different.
What was the postal system like?
Well, it was about the same as it is now. We had we've had some of the best service in post office that you could ask for here for the community, because we had mail delivered on Saturdays, and we could go down and get our daily mail at 10 o'clock. Probably the only difference now is every now and then we have a letter that goes to Erigen or Imnaha or someplace like that, and that's probably technology when it went through the sorter, automatic sorter, computers, whatever you might want to call their equipment now, that it got shifted to the wrong one.
Do you think the post office was more or less efficient than it is now?
Well, I think that it's a little more efficient now with their technology and such, but we had good service before. Because the fellows had the trains going through, and they were fellows on the trains to sort the mail that was put out for Portland, sorted out for the different towns down the line here. And the main difference is that I've got a lot of envelopes in there that I've got leftovers for 2 cents and penny postcards and things like that. And now then, what is it, 37 cents? That's been one of the, you might say, the big change.
Describe how you got around in New England. Like, how did you travel or get to town?
Probably when I was in early grade, we had a saddle horse, or one of the old workhorses that we could put a saddle on. And then as time come along, we had some, a picture of, I think we have here, of the old Dodge that my folks had, open air, and then we drove that there to visit Salt Lake City a time or two. My grandfather lived in LeGrand, and it was open, and we bundle up in all the blankets that you could roll around to, and there were no highways. We'd go the back roads. There's one particular spot I can remember. There's a rail fence right next to this low spot where it would get real muddy, the water would kind of drain into, and so people would tear down the rail fence, put under their cars to get through, or everything like that. It's kind of tough. And then the other one thing that I can remember, the first Model A car that I saw. I came in Gambler. It was owned by Charlie Cleaver. I was in high school, I think, at that time, 31 or so. And boy, the lines on that Model A car, I just, that was fantastic. You got to give, of course, anything to add one of those. When I was at college, I had one that was just about like that, and I was able to get a model of it. Did I show it to you? It's up,
yeah.
You can see it there, that I got here just recently, just the exact card I had in college. And another thing that we had is there's a difference you never hear of, and I'll put it on record here, that the folks bought a Dealey. Now, I doubt if you've ever heard of that make the car. It was a wee dinger. It was a fancy one, but it was, did survive the big time, you might say. And when since then, the transportation did everything. One thing that I can remember when we had that snow, that you might mention it, that this was on public transportation down the line, you know, that the roads going over east and west with the school buses, they were just so full of snow that they would go through and open them up with snow plows. If they got too bad, they'd have to use dozers. And so maybe the wind would come up and it would be still backed up 10 hours after they'd opened it up. So they got in the habit of going out in the fields where there was a fence, and they'd plow three rows out in the field, and they'd have to fill up those three before it got to the main road. And that way they could have it done, and it'd last a little longer. So we've seen quite a few weather changes in the years. I think one of the things is how come the city of Somerville got their name from the big snowstorms. Moved over to where the Foothill Grange is located, and that's where the start of Somerville was. And they had so much snow over there, they decided to move it back to where Somerville is located now. And the reason it was located here to begin with was because the railroad was thought to go through the valley and come to an end in the valley and go across the mountains to Tollgate and up that way instead of the way it went up the Grand Round.
So can you describe the public transportation?
Well, yeah, this is always different. For years they run the daily train from Le Grand to Joseph and back. And, in fact, my dad, when he's working here, mentioned about going down through the canyon where the railroad is being purchased now, the Union of Lowell County, and they'd get off the train down there, and if it stopped for them, and they'd get off the station, they'd face with 3 leaders, and it would be, if they caught one fish, fishing was no good, but lots of times they'd pull in 3 at the same time, and when the train came back that evening, and he'd start tooting every now and then along the river there where he knew they might be. They'd come running up, and he'd stop for them, they'd get on and come home. That's a little different than things are nowadays.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they had buses that run through to Lowell County and back every day. And now then, you get your own car.
Yeah. How do public works differ than they were when we were young, like water and the plowing?
Well, there really was no water in those times. I try to tell them now about the change in the water. You take Le Grand, they had 2 wells now. They just brought in and supplied their water. And up until just 2 years ago, it all came from Beaver Creek. Well, the creek's up about 10, 12 miles above Le Grand, and I can remember the time when Le Grand was going to put in a water system, a pipeline, and one of their main ones is over your way, the Sanderson Springs, and the little creek that runs through Somerville, and that almost became the supply of water for Le Grand. And now then all the towns, Denver, Elgin, Le Grand, Union, Cole, they all have big wells for the city water, and the irrigation that we didn't have in those days where we were raising 30, 40 bushel of wheat. Now we go up to 150 bushels an acre, grass seed at 400 pounds an acre. Now we go to 1,000 and a ton, and the seed, the peppermint, potatoes, and all these other crops that have come in, it's amazing the valley. And it was really thought in those early years that when the first well came down, it was put under H.L. Wagner, which is your name familiar here in the district that he drilled the first well, and then about 12, 13 years I drilled the second one here, and then since then there's probably, I'd hate to guess, 30, 50 wells here in the valley, and even there are wells over across the mountains. They might argue about this, but I think a lot of that they started irrigating after we did, after they saw the yields we were getting on. They don't have quite as many here as many wells, but they're making there from the Columbia River and places like that. All right. Now,
well, that sounds great. Thank you very much.
One thing that I've got to mention is, if it came out there before, and I didn't look tight. Back in those days, we never had anything, only a two-wheel drive pickup. Now we've got four-wheel drives. Like in farming, I had 2 4-wheel drives. When we had bad winter, we chained them up on all four, clear through. And we used to get out to take care of our livestock and things. So that's just the difference. I've got a tool set out here. Probably the first socket set, maybe this came out, is about that big, and it covers the space about that wide and that high. And now then you dig, my wrenches are piles that are all kinds of sizes. So I really see quite a change in the way things are done. And, so that's really probably takes us near to the end of it. Unless you have anything else you want to ask.
No, I am. Thank you.